Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's Dr. Sophie. We are doing our weekly podcast. This week, we are talking about when you think your marriage is over. It sounds kind of sad, but it's really something we have to face if it's the case, because the more you ignore it, the more it becomes the case. So we will be talking today to a really interesting and well-informed guest expert. She wrote a great book. We have things like, you know, how do you know when your marriage is over with, and how do you know it's ending? We're going to look at that. We're going to look at how can you know you should stay or you should go, because a lot of people are like, I don't know, it may be hard to go out there and date again. I really feel more safe and comfortable in my family, but I'm not happy. So we're going to look at that. We're also going to look at how do you know when it's time to leave, and when it's time to leave, you got to leave, because the longer you stay, the worse it gets. And then we're going to give you those 4 points to take away today from learning about your marriage and is it over. If you always call into my voicemail, if you need me at 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW or 1-855-767-4966, each caller will receive a free signed copy of my book, Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication. Stay tuned. Coming right up is our guest expert, Susan Pease Gadbois. So joining me today on talking about marriage and the good and the bad and the ugly is Susan Pease Gadbois. She's a licensed therapist based in the San Francisco Bay Area. She has a really, really great book, and I read it, actually. She'll tell us all about it. Susan, you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm good. So tell me, how do we know if our marriage is over with? Like, our listeners are probably at the edge of their seat because some of them probably think it is over. But then there's those wish it was over, and it's not.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think that for a lot of people, it's not just a cut-and-dried answer, that there's a lot of ambivalence that comes with this decision because it's such a big one. So one day, somebody might feel 90% sure that the marriage is over, and the next day, they're 75% sure they want to stay, and that's part of what makes it so confusing. So I have a couple ways that I tell people to think about their mindset around leaving. And there's a continuum that I like to tell people about called the contemplation continuum. So the beginning is what I call pre-contemplation, where people might think maybe once in a while about leaving, but it's not a thought that stays with them very long. The next phase is where they do start to think about leaving the marriage on a more regular basis, and it's bothersome to them. But then if they don't take action, there's what I call the post-contemplation stage, where it's actually making them feel worse about themselves because they know they should leave and they're not leaving. And this is where I see people get caught in what I call the marital indecision cycle, where they have a fight or a disagreement, or the spouse does something that makes them want to leave the marriage, they de-escalate, they get back into their routine, the tension builds again, and they do the same thing all over again, like the cycle of domestic violence or anything, you know, where you have a rise in tension and then get back in the routine. And I've seen people stay in that for 20 years.
Wow, that's scary.
So, and staying in indecision in anything is not a good place
yeah,
to be.
Good.
It really makes people feel bad about themselves.
So that makes really great sense. So tell me, so our listeners can understand, it is normal, I hate that word, but, you know, is it expected, it's okay if one day you feel 90% sure you want to you want to go and 75% the next day you might want to stay. It's okay to be like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, despite the fact that you feel crazy as the person thinking that, it is actually normal. It is something that I hear from people all the time, yes.
And then as you describe this contemplation continuum, is that the place where people oftentimes like are thinking about going and then all of a sudden they decide they're having a baby?
Well, that does happen. Sometimes people think having a baby is going to save the marriage.
Right. What is that about?
I think hope springs eternal, and you know, it makes it harder to leave someone when you're attached through kids. So maybe it's a way to think that if we have a baby, they'll have to stay or we'll have to figure it out.
But
not a good strategy.
Yeah, that's not good because, you know, that's maybe a sure way to make them go.
Definitely. That's what I was going to say. You and I see all the studies that show that having children actually decreases the happiness of a marriage and makes everything more challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, why would you put more stress on a stressed situation thinking it's going to work out, basically?
Or bring a new being into that dynamic.
Right.
And I believe people do the best they can with the knowledge that they have.
Yeah, I do too.
At the same time, that's a pretty easy one to say, not a good strategy.
Right. So why do you think, like, is there a way that we can have listeners understand how to avoid indecision or the denial that their marriage is ending? Or do you have to, do you have to go through that?
Well, so first of all, let me just say that I think that it's okay in any kind of a marriage to, I think we always look at what the grass is greener on the other side. And
right.
So from time to time to say, gosh, I wonder what it would be like if I were single. But I think that certainly if the marriage isn't working, I think it's much healthier to have conversations and have awareness along the way that it's not working rather than one day wake up and say, I'm out of here, or be told I'm out of here. Like one woman I had, her biggest worry in the morning was what they were going to have for dinner, and her husband came home and said he wanted a divorce, and she was devastated. So I think that having a process is healthy, and I really encourage people to talk about the process with their mate, get some help and get some support so that there are no big crises or big decisions that have to come at the end of that.
Okay, that makes sense. And then, like, what problems can be caused by indecision? Like, when we're not sure about our marriage, can that create more of a problem?
Absolutely. Well, for one thing, as I said, I think it erodes the person who's in the indecision, their self-esteem. So they start to feel worse about themselves. But then what can happen is the relationship can get eroded because there's more tension, there's less respect, there may be less honesty. I'm out of here anyway. I might as well just go have an affair, you know, or I'm out of here anyway, I might as well stay late at work. So there's less regard for the other person, and I think it can just get really destructive if people stay when they should not stay.
So where does indecision do a nexus with sabotaging, or does it not? Like where people will say, well, I might as well have an affair, I'm not happy, or, you know, she looks ugly today, or whatever it is, or he's a mess, you know, where people make reasons for themselves to make it self-destruct and to allow them to behave, misbehave.
Well, I think, so I'm just basing this on my experience, so it's anecdotal. But what I generally see is when someone is conflict avoidant and they don't want to have the conversations, they can justify not having the conversations, and then they feel worse, which then justifies bad behavior and disrespectful behavior. And so I think that people, it's really by avoiding the difficult conversations that lead people into doing things that pull them out of their integrity.
Yeah. And so is indecision, is there some sabotage behavior because of the indecision?
I definitely think there can be sabotage behavior because of not feeling good about wanting to stay and not being able to leave. It's like an immobilization. I liken it to a ship with a hole in the hull. And, you know, you can try to move forward, but it's everything's a lot harder, and, you know, it just doesn't feel good when you're in that indecision. So what I encourage people to do is make a decision one way or another for 6 months and sit with that decision. So if you are deciding to stay, then don't think about leaving. If the thought comes up, make yourself just say, no, I'm here for 6 months. If you decide to commit to leaving, then start looking at apartments and envisioning your life separately. And again, I encourage people to talk to their mate when they're doing this. But try it on and come from a place where you have committed one way or another. And I think that it can make the way clearer.
Right. But you admit, I mean, I'm sure some of our listeners are saying, well, I could, yeah, it sounds great to talk to my mate, but like, they're not going to want to hear the fact that I'm moving out and I'm going to find an apartment. You know, they're going to get angry. So doesn't that put at risk the whole thing falling apart?
It can. And that's one of the reasons people don't talk to their mate. And so I definitely encourage people to get some professional guidance. Sometimes when the therapist or clergy person is there, that can help temper some of the emotions or help them create a plan so they're not trying to figure it out from this really emotional place all by themselves. But what are the alternatives? If you don't talk about it and then you spring it on your mate that you want out, what I tell people is, okay, so you've just set up the worst-case scenario. Now it's going to be adversarial, no
right,
matter what.
Right. Exactly.
Because you've just brought out the worst in your spouse.
Right. So it really is better to have a neutral party that's helping to navigate and mediate all that stuff, especially because it's so emotional.
Definitely. Absolutely. This is one of the biggest decisions anyone will make. And so getting as much support as possible is always recommended. Sometimes people can't afford that. And I think there are, you know, 12-step groups that sometimes can be helpful, or friends and family. And, you know, the concern I have with friends and family is that sometimes, as well-meaning as they are, they just say, well, just leave the jerk.
Right.
And it's not quite so easy, or they get tired of hearing about the situation.
Right, right. That's very true.
Yeah.
I want to read you an email. Thomas from Portland, Oregon is asking, my wife and I have gone through what I refer to as funks, quote unquote, in our 18-year marriage. And each has varied in time, from a couple of days to a couple of months. Is there a specific time frame of being in a place where you aren't communicating or feeling loving toward each other that signifies that your relationship may be ending?
That is a wonderful question, and I do write about that in Contemplating Divorce. That it's not an easy question to answer, and without knowing them, I can't say specifically. But generally speaking, I think 2 months certainly is a long time to go if you're not speaking. I think that that would be untenable. But I think that every relationship has difficult periods, and depending on what's going on, I would say a rough patch might last between 6 months and a year. But if a rough patch is lasting, you know, 2 years, I think that's a long time. And you may want to start thinking about a different kind of an intervention or getting some kind of help.
Yeah, 2 years is a long time.
Long time to be unhappy. But you and I have seen a lot of people say 20 years unhappy.
Ooh, my. All right, I have another email for you. This is from Tanya from Florida, from Miami. How can I force myself to be decisive about a decision as pressure-filled and serious as getting a divorce? I have children, and I still love my wife, but I haven't felt that romance in our relationship in what feels like years. And I don't know if these feelings I have are feelings that everyone has and that these things happen over time in any marriage, or if they are feelings that I could be happier and they mean that I could be happier in a different relationship.
That's also a great question. And Esther Perel, who's big in this field, talks about people aren't leaving anymore because they're unhappy. People are leaving because they could be happier. And I can't tell another person whether that's a good reason to leave or not. What I can say to that question specifically is that in the course of a relationship, it is to be expected that the physical attraction, the sexual attraction, is going to subside, and that is a normal part of long-term relationships. It's one of the reasons they're as challenging as they are, and one of the reasons people are questioning monogamy.
Right.
I have one couple now that I'm working with where they're trying different ways of spicing up the excitement in their sex life. And if that is an option for Tanya, then I would say try that. But there's a mistake I think people make of saying, I'm not in love anymore, meaning I don't have that romantic high. And especially when you have kids, I think that maybe you want to look at what the purpose of your marriage may have evolved into. Maybe
right.
The relationship is just meant now to raise the kids together, which is what I call a parenting marriage. And that's perfectly okay. And sometimes people have agreements where they can have mates outside the relationship. They open the marriage up. That's something we're seeing a lot more of. And I'm not in a position to say whether that's right or wrong, but I know that we're seeing people trying things like that. So I would check out Esther Perel's YouTube videos.
I got it. That makes sense. Yeah, I think it scares people because they... Many times I hear, well, I'm just not in love with them anymore, or her or him, but I love them. Well, you know, is there a difference? You know, I just think it's different, like you say, for everybody, but they should make it work for whatever's right for them and their needs and if they have children and that kind of thing.
There's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
You know, kids, money, you know, jobs, in-laws. I mean, there are so many things to think about that it's not a simple decision.
Right. So I have another question. I have a lot of, I'm sure as you do, women especially, but some men that come to me because they're at this place and they're really fearful, either because their spouse or partner is an alcoholic or they're abusive in some form or fashion. But that doesn't mean that they want to get out of the relationship, but they think they have to. And so sometimes they make that decision to get out based on fear. And then when this fear subsides, then their love starts to feel again and surface. And, you know, so I think a lot of times people are making decisions maybe not from the right place, and again, that's where guidance would help them. What do you think?
Absolutely, and I make a distinction also of making an action-based decision versus a fear-based decision. And I believe that when we make decisions based on fear, we're probably not making as good of decisions as if we're making them based on what our goals are, what are we headed toward, rather than what are we trying to avoid. But that said, in an abusive situation or a situation where someone may be an addict and it's unpredictable and nothing you're doing is making them stop, I think, you know, sometimes having a bottom line of saying, I'm out of here, I don't want to accept this unacceptable behavior, I have seen where that makes people, it gets their attention, and they decide they don't want to lose the marriage because of their addiction or their behavior. I've also seen where it's such an addiction where people can't stop, and that's painful. But
yeah.
Sometimes if you're away from the situation, you start to think it's not so bad, and then you go back and it is as bad. And I think that's a place where outside perspective can help someone see more clearly.
Yeah. I think, you know, even if you have to do that back and forth a little bit, each time you go back and you go forth, you get a different perspective.
Yep.
And a broader understanding.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So tell me, I want to read you another email in a minute, but are there any telltale signs that our listeners could tell them that you think would mean to them their marriage isn't viable or it's not working anymore or maybe you need to get out? I don't know. Are there any telltale things?
Well, there are what I call workability factors, and that means, you know, do you have a marriage or a relationship that is even workable? The first one that I look at is your spouse working on the relationship with you, or are you the only one doing the work? So are you the one, you know, making the therapy appointments, going to the therapy appointments?
Doing all the heavy lifting.
Exactly. Yeah. If your mate is not trying to work with you, then you don't have a marriage to work on.
Right, the behavior speaking.
Yeah, that's right. There are other things regarding, you know, safety, and you were talking a minute ago about behavior. I mean, if someone has a pattern of being unfaithful and they keep promising that they're going to stop or it's not serious or whatever they're saying, and they promise, I won't do it again, and they do it again, you have to start looking at that's again, one of those actions saying I'm not willing to work on this relationship.
Yeah.
So safety, honesty, respect, and I think any of these issues with intervention can be changed, but both people have to want it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let me read you this email. Jenny from San Jose is asking us, are there ways to change the typical marriage dynamic so that they fit each other and their partner's needs more appropriately? I feel like the decision to leave is not as black and white as to get divorced, quote unquote, or to not get divorced. It's not as black and white. And
so this is speaking to my heart, because my latest book that I co-authored with Vicki Larson is called The New I Do. And we talk about the fact that marriage needs to, I call it the Copernican model. It has to revolve around us rather than us trying to revolve around it. And so it may mean that, and we are seeing this is what we talk about in the book, is that we're seeing couples are starting to live apart now. Couples are marrying overtly, like openly, for money and financial security. And people are doing what I'm calling parenting marriages, where they're either getting married or hooking up with someone just to have a child with them, or staying in the marriage simply to co-parent. And it's definitely a nice alternative, because staying in an unhappy situation or leaving are both extremes that cause a lot of problems. So a nice compromise is a parenting marriage or opening the marriage, or some way that you're getting more of your needs met from other people, not just one person.
No, I think they're good alternatives, but everybody has to be comfortable with that.
Yes, everyone should agree on the terms, not just one person. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Right, you got to have that. Hold on, I want to play you a voicemail.
Okay.
Hey, Dr. Sophie. I feel like probably my husband would be just a selfless decision. You know, I think I'd be happier in a different relationship, to be honest. But with kids and security, and I know I should be there for my kids, and I mean, to be honest, it's scary to think about going out there on my own and dating in my 40s. You know, am I not being honest with myself or healthy making this decision to stay? Love your advice. Thank you.
Ooh, that was a
okay,
lot.
So I need you to, it was a little hard to hear, yeah.
It said, or she said, I feel like if I were to leave my husband, it would be a very selfish decision. I think that I would be happier in a different relationship. However, we have children and we have security. I know that I should be there for my kids. And to be honest, it's scary to go out there and be on my own again. Am I not being honest with myself or healthy in making the decision to stay?
Oh, wow. Well, it's, you know, I wouldn't, again, ever tell anyone that they were wrong for whatever decision they're making. I think that each person has to decide for themselves whether they are okay taking care of their needs. So I have a guy who also is feeling just a ton of guilt because he did leave, and he feels like that's being selfish, and he was looking out too much for his own needs, and now he can't see his kids every day, and it's really upsetting him, and he didn't want to do a parenting marriage, and yet, you know, this isn't a good option for him either. Any road you take at this point is going to involve some pain.
Right.
So
right.
I think this might be a situation where she may want to map out, you know, the next 5 to 10 years and say, okay, I'm going to stay, and this is what I'm going to need to have set up in order for me to leave. But think about something. If you're 40, concerned about dating, in 10 years you're going to be 50 and having to get out there and date.
And really concerned then.
Exactly, you know, and so you may want to think about that as well. There's a lot to consider.
Right.
I like having a plan. I like mapping it out so that, again, it's not this impulsive decision.
Right, and it's not a plan that you have to stick tightly to every single piece of it, but it gives you a good format and a structure to work within.
Exactly.
Right. So tell us, before I set you free, is there a right time to really leave, or is there a wrong time? Or it doesn't matter, it's up to each person?
That's a great question, too. So I will say there is not necessarily a right time. I've heard so many people say, well, I'm waiting until it feels like it's the right time or it feels obvious.
I hear I'm waiting for his 401k to come mature.
well, that is a little more objective. But, you know, some people wait for the sign, and I think that's one of the reasons people wait 20 years, because
right.
that sign doesn't always come. So there's not necessarily a right time, but there definitely are wrong times. And I've seen people leave, like one guy left on his son's birthday. That's not a nice time to leave. Now the son always relates his birthday to the family breaking up. Holidays tend to be not a good time. There was one girl who was in a gymnastics program. She was on her way to the Olympics. The husband left and the family had to divide all their assets and they couldn't afford coaching for her any longer. And that was the end of her gymnastics career. And that was devastating to her. So again, there are a lot of things to think about in terms of your own needs, the needs of your kids, other factors involved, and it's definitely a place, you know, in contemplating divorce, I have a lot of exercises that people can get some of the clarity that they're looking for. So I recommend doing something like that, doing some journaling, getting people to ask you the hard questions.
Right. And is there, if they do decide to go, and they've gotten themselves appropriately to this step and make that decision, are there steps that you recommend our listeners take as either their first few steps or is there a roadmap?
Yeah, unfortunately, there is not a roadmap. And I think that's one of the reasons that divorce is as hard as it is. So what people have done traditionally is they've gone and hired an attorney. They call their neighbor and they say, who is the attorney you used last year in your divorce? And I feel like that's the absolute worst first step that a person can make because you don't know anything about that attorney. Now you're on their agenda, and you're also counting on that attorney to create your plan for you. And you're losing some power and control, and it's costing a lot more money. So I recommend that people do as much research as they can first on the different divorce possibilities, models out there. There are several now that are viable, not just litigation or mediation. And to do the research on what feels like will work best for you and your spouse, find out what resources you need, gather all your documents, do as much as you can ahead of time, then decide on what model you want to use, and then pick your attorneys or professionals from that place. There are a lot more people doing DIY, do your own divorce these days. I still recommend that you have at the very least a consulting attorney. But, you know, there's so many more things you can do on your own, and that's going to save a lot of time and money.
And aggravation probably, too.
Absolutely, and make you feel more in control of your process.
Right, and it also makes you communicate better and more with your partner because you have to work through things more.
I mean, you know, and that said, sometimes one of the reasons you're getting out of the marriage is because you can't communicate. So
right.
if you couldn't in your marriage, you may not be able to in your divorce, in which case hiring professionals who can help you with that will help.
Right.
But to the extent that you can do the work on your own, I think it's going to help you certainly save money and time and aggravation.
Absolutely. Susan, thank you very much. Susan Peasgood-Watt, tell us about the new I Do book. I love that book. It's really good.
Oh,
I think it's really helpful too, and I recommend it to many people.
Well, thank you. And I believe that we have a very shame-based model of marriage, that if you're not doing it this one way, that you're doing something wrong. And Vicki and I, you know, are saying in this book that there are many different ways to do marriage, and we need to start embracing that. Whether we agree with it or not, it's really not up to us to say what's right for another person. And so these are some of the trends that we're seeing happening, and we're trying to encourage so that we take away the one-size-fits-all model and let people know that they have more latitude to make marriage work for them.
You're welcome. Where can we find this book of yours?
Well, we have a website. My website is changingmarriage.com, so all my books are on that website. We also have the New I Do Facebook page, and we post articles all the time that are fascinating about what's going on with marriage. So I would love people to join us on our Facebook page or our thenewidobook.com page as well.
We'll be doing it.
Great. Thanks, Dr. Sophie.
Thank you. So that was Susan Pease-Gadbois. She's a licensed therapist who was our guest expert today. She's from San Francisco Bay Area. She just wrote a new book called The New I Do, and I have read that book. It's very good. And you can find it at changingmarriage.com, which is her website. It's www.changingmarriage.com. It's called The New I Do. So it's a really great book. Grab it, and it will help you get some clarity about what we're doing here as far as marriage and your relationship, and should you stay, should you go, how do you change it, and communicating with your partner. There are 4 points, though, that I still need you to really focus on and take away from today. And when you read the book, they'll make a lot more sense, too, because there's a lot of information that supports these. The first one is understanding and accepting that making the decision to get a divorce, stay in your marriage, make it some changes or whatever is not a very black and white situation. So there are days you may feel like 90%, I'm leaving this marriage, it's not for me. 2 days later, you might feel 75%, I got to stay in it, it is for me. So that back and forth is a really typical scenario to feel, and it's okay, and it's part of the early process. The second point that we talked about today is a phenomenon that Susan calls the contemplation continuum, and it's really just a timeline of how your thinking goes, or our thinking goes, as we're progressing through this. The first step is really, you're thinking about it every now and then. You never really thought about it before, but every now and then it's popping in your head, maybe after an argument or after your partner irritates you or there's something going on. It starts to kind of pop up. The second step is when you think of it a whole lot more often. It's coming up maybe weekly, maybe monthly, but definitely after there's an interaction between you and your partner and it's kind of heated up. And then the third stage is really called post-contemplation, and it's really when you have not stop thinking about it, but you also know and feel it's the right thing to do to leave that marriage, but you're staying in it. And that's the place where Susan says, and I believe that to be true, it becomes a self-fulfilling sabotage for yourself, where you get stuck in something then because you're paralyzed. You don't want to stay. You don't want to go. You think about it all the time. You know you should go. Feel bad to leave. It's just a bad place to be. So you want to continue through this process so you don't end up there, making decisions timely and communicating with your partner or with a professional so that you can get the guidance you need so you don't get to that place. The third point that I'd like you to understand and really take to heart, because it's kind of an oxymoron, because you're getting out of a marriage or a relationship that you have a problem communicating with the other person with, but communication is the key to get a really good, healthy divorce also. So being able to communicate along the process of even deciding should you stay or should you go, and if you need help with that, then get the professional help you need, because that's really the key to have a good, successful outcome. And then the fourth thing that's very important is when you're making a decision, really make sure you're making your decision by what you want to move toward, what the new steps are and the roadmap is going to be for your life versus what you want to run away from. Because if you're running away from something and it's fear-based decision-making, it's not going to end in a good place. So those are the 4 decisions that I think are very important to look at as an overall structure. And get that book. It's really good, The New I Do, because it will fill in a lot of these gaps and answer a lot of your questions. All right, guys, thank you for listening, and thank you for all our callers today, voicemails and emails. I am available on my website at www.drsophie.com and on iTunes. My phone app is available on the iTunes store, so go check it out, and it is free. Voicemail is there 24/7, 1-855-767-4966. My book, Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication, is available online. Gotta get it. I'm on Twitter and I'm on Facebook to follow me to find out where I'm at. Visit iTunes to download the full version of Andy Grammer's Keep Your Head Up, and don't forget to sweep.